Good morning, everyone. Hello. Thank you for being here in Paradiso on this beautiful day. I am Dragan Klaić, and I will moderate this panel with my distinguished friends and colleagues, whom I will introduce in a moment. I just want to say this is the fourth panel in a series that has been going on this whole month, organized by Felix Meritis, Paradiso, and Goethe Institute Amsterdam, Deutschland in Europa, in Deutschland. It was preceded by a panel, Deutschland neu definiert, a panel, Jeder ist ein Ausländer, everyone is a foreigner, Europa, Europa, and today we have a rather cryptic, provoking title for our discussion, Die Reflexion ist am Ende, die Zukunft gehört der Kunst, a quote from an interview of Heiner Müller. The reflection is at the end, the future belongs to the art. We will see what can we make out of this statement and how we can toss it and turn it around and distort it, I guess. Allow me to introduce now all the participants from my right to my left. First is Boris Groys, originally from Russia, from Moscow, for quite a few years now in Germany, teaching philosophy and art and writing about modern art at the University of Münster. Next to him is Hannes Böhringer, who have been teaching at the Berlin University, Freie University Berlin, for many years now, teaching in Kassel, also editor of Art and Cultural Affairs review Daedalus. Then Andrei Bitov from St. Petersburg, author, writer, president of the Russian PEN. Next to me, George Conrad, writer, president, international president of PEN, novelist from Budapest. Then Heiner Müller, playwright from Berlin. Jan-Jolis Lamars, theater director and designer from Amsterdam. And finally, another Amsterdamer, Peter Schaat, composer.
We are experiencing not just the end of a century, not just another family shift, but the end of a millennium. A new millennium is rapidly coming nearer. Thanks to technology, thanks to television, it will be a new beginning on a planetary scale. It will be our first common millennium. Some fear that now the world war is over, the human race will bore itself to death. Those who will not practice, serve, and love the arts surely will. The others, I mean we, shall overcome someday.
Thank you very much, Peter Schaat, for this passionate, and I expected it to be passionate, plaidoyer. I turn now to Hans Böhringer to provide another view on this condition on the prospects of the art at the end of a millennium.
I have difficulties with this sentence of Heiner Müller. Reflection has come to an end. The future belongs to art. I ask myself, what kind of art has come to an end, and to which art the future will belong to? My deepest impression in the last 3 years was the breakdown of the Berlin Mauer, because I lived in and still live in West Berlin, and I remember quite well in the first weeks that all my friends who are artists realized, or I had the deep impression, that reality is much more exciting than art. And a lot of artists stopped to make art and had really a lot of difficulties to begin again with doing art. And I thought about it, and I think it stopped when we went to an opening of an exhibition. We didn't talk about the art that we saw. We talk about politics. And I think suddenly we noticed that the art, which had become a discourse on art, an art on art, had been very boring. And perhaps there will be a long way for us, this was a typical German situation, a long way back to normal life, to responsibility, because we thought that art and culture had become for us a form of compensation of politics, a replacement of the view what's going on in the world. And I think this will change the art production in Germany very deeply, not suddenly, because the art production cannot change so immediately. And I don't think this change will be so primitive that art becomes realistic again, but I think it will change a lot. This was my first idea on the sentence. The second was a philosophical thought. Reflection has come to an end. I think it belongs to the essence of reflection that it is, or that it is in the danger to be endless. It is in the virtual space which has no end. It's the atmosphere of hesitation, of doubting, and you cannot stop reflection because it has an it goes on, and it is an art. It is art to make a stop on reflection, because, for instance, in everyday life, you haven't got enough time to reflect all things. You must come to an end and to decide to do something, to make something. And I think this is the art which we try to do in our everyday life, to be ready when you are not yet ready, you have not come to an end with your reflection.
What kind of limitations, what kind of difficult choices the artists are facing? How do you feel in your existence and your life as an artist, as a writer, as an intellectual in Russia, in terms of choices that have to be made, dilemmas that sort of are forced on you?
You see, as I received this very late possibility to compare myself with anybody from another world, I came to a very easy conclusion that's just the same. There is no real difference. We only dream that there is another world where is a lot of freedom for artists and he's independent, etc., etc. But the same, the question of quality will be the first, and it's our struggle for freedom, it's struggle for our quality, it's our independence, it's the same. All the obstacles can be different. And now, what can I say serious? Because, maybe it's struggle for paper now in Russia, not for the word even. The paper became so expensive that one have to think how to make it with his hands or to find some kind of production before he'll start to write. We have really another problem, but we are just the same. I see no difference in position of artists now. How to speak, for instance, about all these ends, we discussed a month ago, or 2 months ago, or in the end of last year, almost in the same group, in Bucharest, the end of history. Now we're discussing the end of reflection. I remember that before that it was the end of future. Maybe it's a question of European geography, just to change place in order to find another end. We are just inside of the problem of end of the last great empire in the world, and it's the same huge as 1/6 of the world. Yes, the problem is rather huge, and the end of empire. Well, maybe I'll dream even wider, and because the reasons for any kind of optimism are also more difficult. Maybe I'll think that we are coming to the end of imperialistic thinking as a representatives of human mankind, not only as a representatives of Soviet Union, but as human beings, we were imperialists in different cases in our attitude to nature, to each other, to all kind of systems. We are imperialists. And I wonder what is the reason for our politicians who are not intellectuals at all in any country to find a common language at last before intellectuals manage to find it. And sometimes I think that something horrible is coming. There is no another reason for them to find the same language. What is the reason for all these disarmaments and failure of big structures? And as not a kind of changing mind of human being as a total, in total understanding. Maybe we have a good, nice hole in the heavens, and they have a feeling like these Japanese fishes about earthquake, and they are just in a hurry not to lose their power. And we are discussing that we are departed. We are not departed at all. And if to reflect the absence of reflection, maybe, well, it's a very popular, this Shakespeare's words about the mirror which is brought on the road. I wonder what happened to the mirror. Maybe we need the second mirror to go in parallel, or it's broken in thousands of pieces, and every piece we'll see our personal end, but my optimism is that we'll soon receive another common task than because we've lost this comfortable position of living in different systems, but we'll live in one world, in one air, in one space, and then though these ecological slogans, they became also boring, and they were told they are old-fashioned a little bit, but and I am afraid that they can be less green than brown, but still we'll have another problems, and the art, well, we have difficulties in using foreign words in Russia. It became great fashion to use all kind of unknown words, as market, for instance. Nobody knows what is it, and our currency, we've never seen it, etc., etc. And I like this well romantic feeling of another words, but if to translate back the word reflection to the Russian language, is quite widely used. Maybe it's used quite in another meaning. Maybe you mean in reflection something else than we do. But I know there is a very important machine in Russia called reflector. It's to warm the air. It's the most popular in, well, among common, so-called common people. And we have such a proverb that well, usually it's for about fools, not practical people, that they are doing something so unpractically that they are warming the air, warming the street. And it seems to me that's the only task for art, to be the, such kind of reflectors, if not to reflect anything. And we are warming the streets in all, through all our life, and it's not a bad occupation, because we will be never concerned as practical people.
Thank you, Andrei Bito.
Coming back to the political changes, the political observation and rhetoric and judgment and moralization, everything, can make periods illuminating and brilliant, and can make them dark and full of mourn and death. But these are very superficial cliches. And if I remember on the difficult years of my life, and if I observe my friends and even older people remembering on the difficult years of their life, although these years were really difficult and painful, and I don't have to describe them in details, but I remember that it was a good memory for them because they survived, because they resisted, because they managed it somehow. Because it was also somehow funny, because it was sometimes a common and extraordinary period of their life. If you take, for example, four or five gentlemen in a room around the table, and all of them were in the jail, and all of them were maybe in the same cell or on the same corridor, so they have such kind of scooter memories. And they will make fun reflecting on them around the table with cafe.
What's baker made? But you cannot eat parliament, and you cannot eat a picture. A picture is just there. And so it's about expressing our will, our personal will, our collective will. And there are different modes of expression this will. There are always, all of them are somehow connected, because it is always a problem, what is useful, what is not useful, what is true, what is false. And it is interconnected in some other very intimate way for me.
Yes, but don't you think it's very dangerous to allow artists to be in politics? But, for instance,
when the Academy in Vienna had accepted Hitler as a painter. he would have been a bad painter, but it doesn't matter. There are no bad painters. But, you know, I mean, it's quite dangerous. And we need mediocre people in politics. They are trustworthy. There are many idiots, but it's better to have an idiot in a leading position in politics than a genius. what I want to say is reflector, actor. Remember, there's the anecdote about Brecht standing in front of his assistants in the theater and looking at the public coming in. And the assistant asked him, Brecht, is this what you did here? It was a Caucasian shock circle. Is this epic theater in your sense? And he said, no, it can't be epic theater, because epic theater in my sense is possible only when the perversity stops to make a profession out of the pleasure.
And Andrei Bitov, as I understand, in Russia there is an explosion of new playwrights, many new authors, but are they really trying to come to terms with the rapidly changing reality of what used to be known as Soviet Union, or they are trying to invent an art that will be a territory on its own, that will be distanced and removed from what has been the social, the collective experience of the last few years or last 75 years? How do you see this attitude?
You see, I don't see it at all. It's just a mistake. I'm not. Well, it's happened like that I don't know Sitter at all. Once in 1944, I've seen one performance. And I was so frightened that I have a kind of I'm crazy about visiting Sitter.
You told me this story.
Yes. I don't know what is happening in Shakespeare's times, in our times, but I think that there is some reasons for bad feelings for theater people and for playwrights, because well, we have a lot of theaters alive. Yes. For instance, Central Committee Theater, and then KGB Theater was opened at last, and we are all inside of this great theater coming, and it was, well, it was prepared for a long period. It was hard work for 70 years to have these closed theaters, and they are all opened. To conquer this new information for public, it's quite impossible. And therefore, maybe, and also the usage of money, because it was state theaters, they were paid, and some of them managed to be more or less avoiding all this socialist, realist ideological pressure, and working with it at the same time, and they had some strange room. And now, being on open air without any, even this falling ruble is absent, maybe they are just reflecting what is happening with them, and not more. All attempts to become more real, more present, more authentic, more showing the moment, it's all failure. It can't work in any time. It's not even the question of the artist. I wonder whether they are so frightened if they are and they are looking for it, what you ask. Then it's a real failure of the whole set.
And what do you think, Hannes Böhringer? Do you feel, Heiner Müller said in the interview, perhaps the first man was an artist, but then the second man on the earth was an economist. and he has drawn a few minutes ago again our attention to the importance of money when we discuss art, that a discussion of art cannot go on without consideration of money issues. That's of course something we do all the time. But do you feel that this whole emergence of a mass marketed art is substantially changing the perspectives of artistic development? Is the dynamics of artistic innovation substantially changed? Is it accelerated?
Yes, I think so. I think since perhaps 15 years ago, there is a real blow up and boom in visual art, and there is a lot of a really lot of money in this sector. But and in the beginning, all the artists were very excited by this new situation, and it was a new situation that an artist, a young artist, perhaps 25 years old, could earn a lot of money within few months. This was absolutely a new experience. But now I think the situation has normalized. And I feel that the artists in West Germany, they can live with this situation that some artists earn a lot money and the others don't earn so much, are rather poor, but they can handle it. But now I feel that the artists who come from East Germany or from East Europe, they talk a lot of money now, and it's because for them it's a new experience, of course. Mm-hmm.
For me, one aspect of this problem is that censorship is refining style, the way of writing. But commercial censorship doesn't. It's corrupting the working morals of artists. That's one problem. I mean, especially maybe in visual arts, but in literature too. You know, there's no reason to write a good sentence if you can sell the sentence which is not well written. Yeah, that's a big problem now. I feel it when I see text plays of young writers, that they want to be fast, they want fast money, and it doesn't matter if it's a good text. A good text is gets you not more money than a bad text. That's one aspect of this new.
Well, but in this point, I'm very conservative. I think that spirit is always stronger than money.
Yeah, but many Eastern European artists or writer, even if it sounds cynical, will claim indeed that the censor in the old days was a friend and an ally, someone who made the pressure to. An ally in a sense that it made, demanded this extra effort.
Okay. Hmm? Co-author.
Co-author?
Yeah.
Maybe yeah. There's another dimension in this story, and I'm personally very sensitive to this dimension. You know, every political system has its own outlook, has its own aesthetic expression, I would say. There's a problem of the relationship between high art and culture market. But I mean, the Western democratic capitalist market system has its own aesthetic face as a system. It's not Dutch, it's not German, it's not American, it's not French. But if you're going through the Western Europe, you see this face, yes? You see this aesthetic dimension, you can recognize it immediately. It has some aesthetic quality as a whole. And for example, the Soviet system had a different face, different music, different face expression in the crowd, different classing, different pictures, always different. Or Nazi Germany, for example. I mean, every political system and market system or socialist system has this aesthetic dimension. And for example, now for me, it's very strong aesthetic experience to go to Moscow and to see how this old Soviet aesthetics, Soviet aesthetic face is combined with the Western. It's really a monstrum. It's like a like this incredible postmodern artwork, the whole Moscow. Maybe it disappears in 2 or 3 years, but now it's a very strong feeling and strong aesthetic experience. And I think the artists can deal with it and can work with it, and many artists are doing it very effectively.
Hmm.
There is another.
Yesterday in a meeting of Gulliver, Heiner Müller was talking about utopianism being almost criminalized. If you have utopian dreams, you're an outcast, you're almost a criminal. In that sense, said an artist, if he cannot do that, fulfill his utopian ambitions, he has to become a terrorist. I like this notion of terrorist as a artiste manqué, disappointed, frustrated artist. Art, as they try to formulate, is attempt to formulate a vision. So if die Zukunft gehört der Kunst, we have to go on creating, criticizing visions and dealing with visions, Visionen in Deutsch. Or is the future a postulate of Miller's sentence something else? Einer von uns wir überleben, maybe der Doppelgänger mit meinem Gesicht aus Schnee. People like to quote you, Heiner. Is only utopia surviving? What about this utopian capability of art?
I just want to tell the Chinese legend. The emperor of the south and the emperor of the north, they are visiting the emperor of the east. And they eat and drink together and they get presents and they are very happy, go back to their kingdoms. And then they meet the emperor of the north and the emperor of the south. We have to do something for our host because he was so friendly and us so much. We have to do something for him. Then they remember that he has the emperor of the east. He has no holes, no nose holes, no ear holes, no asshole, no holes. So you visit him again, and you put holes into his body just to help him to be like we are. Then they visit him again. Monday they put one hole. Tuesday, second hole, and so on. And Saturday or Sunday, they put the last hole, and then he dies. That's one problem now, not only between East and West.
Back to the utopian plateau. Is this?
No, it's utopian plateau.
Well, there
we have to accept it. He could live without holes, but they couldn't accept this and they couldn't think it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they wanted to help him. And help the
A question is in German. I'll read it as it is written. Ist es möglich, das Wesen von Realität und Wahrheit etwas konkreter zu umschreiben und möglicherweise auch die Realität des Traums, and this is the dream that comes back in several questions, the relationship of art to dreaming, yearning, imagining what does not exist. If the future belongs to the art, art with capital A, and not everyone can be an artist, as Mr. Schad claims, not everyone can be an artist, to whom belongs the future? Only to the happy few, as always? Happy few? Huh?
It's not the only one. It's not a different from a baker, as I said, in that sense. It's a profession. It's not, we are not here like members of a new committee to save the world or anything. I would refuse to be them or to have any vision to be anything. I mean, that is just the wrong idea about art. Never was like that. It was not for Bach, it was not for the real great musicians. It never was anything of a messianic nature. It was something of a profession. And you have many professions. It's beautiful that you have so many professions. That people specialize, you see a character being an architect, being a baker, again, because I'm a baker. That is to me not something to be of an elite. It's not an elite. No, it's a profession, one of the many professions.
Hmm. And there was a question for you, Heiner. It's in Dutch, but it was translated to me in English. I'll retell it. You were talking about the positive impact of the bureaucratic censorship on an artist in the past regime, forcing him to be better in his job. But this bureaucratic censure, of course, created a lot of victims, people who could not become better artists because of the censorship, but could not be artists and could not do art. So is there anything else but this capitalist censorship, the censorship of the market that you were talking about? Is there anything else to rely upon?
No, I think the problem was in the, I can talk about GDR, East Germany, that it censors people who made the censorship, they didn't know anything about arts. And so we had no real censorship. You can deal with the censorship which is intelligent, but it's not easy to deal with the censorship which is just stupid and
brutal.
Brutal because of stupidity or of being afraid of new things. And that was the problem. You know, when Francis Ulbricht, he was a lover of the arts. You know, and so he went to an exhibition, paintings, and there was a landscape of snow, and he stood there and he said, "You see, I think this picture is a bit cold." For 1 year, it was forbidden to paint snow. But I mean, for instance, Pushkin, Chekhov, they all were. There was a censorship, and they all had to deal with it. But I think they had an intelligent censorship that time in Russia, I think. But Pushkin, for instance, the end of Boris Godunov, you know better. I just read about it. The end was, in the first version, the people applaud the wrong or the false Tsar. And the censor said, "No, that's not possible." And then he changed the line, and in the second version it said the people remain silent, which is much more positive and very impressive.
Stronger. Several of us at this table lived in the shadow of Sava Lukic, the stupid censor in Mikhail Bulgakov's play The Crimson Island, the one who comes to the dress rehearsal of a speedily done stage adaptation of Jules Verne, The Children of Captain Grant, because he has to go to Yalta, so he has to say okay if the theater is to open the show, and of course he doesn't know anything about theater, but then